Med school and PA school. How to get in with Jennifer Welch of SUNY Upstate. Welcome to the 168th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get that delightful instant when you can high-five the person next to you and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Now, I recently reviewed our podcast stats and realized that the most popular medical school admissions podcast we ever hosted was an interview with Jennifer Welch, Associate Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid at SUNY Upstate Medical University. I thought it would be a great idea to have her back on the show again. Jennifer is extraordinarily experienced in med school admissions. Since 1994, she has served first as SUNY Upstate Medical's Director of Admissions, and in January 2013, she became the Associate Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid at SUNY Upstate. So that's over 20 years heading up a medical school admissions office. And in addition to heading up admissions for the medical school, the physician program, she is also in charge of admissions for all healthcare-related programs, including nursing, PT, PA, MD, MPH, and MPH. We will also touch on at least one of the related programs, specifically the physician assistant program, in the show today. Jennifer, thanks for joining me on Admissions Straight Talk.
Happy to be here, Linda. Thank you.
And delighted to have you again. So, I'm not going to ask you to give an overview because I think you did that the last time you were on, but what's new at SUNY Upstate Medical University?
Well, actually some really exciting news. We have a brand new president. She started in January. She is the first female president that Upstate has had. She's also an African-American female, and we are absolutely delighted to have her. She is very dedicated to enhancing our mission, creating a more diverse population among all of our programs, and I think is going to be a really great leader for us. So we're really looking forward to what the next couple of months really has in store for us. Aside from the new president, we also have a new curriculum. It's a systems-based curriculum for students, and there's much more clinical contact as well as clinical context in the first 2 years, and really an innovated kind of self-directed learning for students. So we're hoping that this will be a wonderful new opportunity for students, and we're just implementing it this fall. So our first-year students that actually start today are going to be the, I don't want to say guinea pigs because that's terrible, but certainly they're going to be
the inaugurators.
Yes, benefiting, I think, greatly from the new curriculum.
Can you give me a little bit more insight into that? What does it mean, a self-directed learning?
So it's really small, case-based type of learning groups, some PBL stuff included in that, some principles behind that, organ-based system, collaborative co-directors, so they're getting both an MD and a PhD, who are teaching them the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's going to be more hands-on type of experiences than just sitting in a sitting in a lecture hall and being talked at. Students, we still have the curriculums where everything will be videotaped, so students can learn on their own if they need to at the end of the day. But it's really going to be students becoming much more involved in their learning. So I think that it's going to be great. I don't know really the intricacies of the curriculum at this point, but I do know that it has been a three-year process, and I think that all of the folks, including the new curriculum dean, are really excited about it.
Is it going to be more in terms of advancing? Is it going to be more competency-based, or is it still going to be kind of everybody still advancing at the same rate and?
No, they're still going to be advancing at the same rate. It's currently a pass-fail curriculum, and that has changed again in the last couple of years to, take a little bit more of the competition out of it. Mm-hmm. But our curriculum has been competency-based for the last several years anyway, but really just trying to have students work in teams and small groups and really do a great job of working together, which I think is really the future of medicine anyway. It's team-based. It's not, you know, a one-man show.
Right. Right. No, that's definitely, I've had many guests actually make that point in the last several months. What, and you mentioned also that there's going to be earlier clinical exposure.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And I think that that's certainly one of the things that, you know, people go into medicine because they want to work with people. And I think, you know, unfortunately, it's been very lecture-based for so long that, you know, students, once they get to third year, they're, you know, they're chomping at the bit to get into their patients. And I think that definitely now they'll have more of an opportunity for more clinical experiences, but also understanding more of the clinical relevance behind what they're learning.
So will they be going on rounds earlier with doctors? Will they be, you know, I guess are going beyond shadowing? Will they be doing minor procedures?
I don't believe that they'll be doing minor procedures. I think, though, that the big difference will be the co-teaching, you know, the MD and the PhD kind of influence in terms of the basic sciences, where in the past most of our coursework has been taught strictly by PhDs.
Got it. Okay. Let's talk admissions for a minute. The new MCAT is now a little over a year old. Are you and your staff comfortable with it? Are you relying more on grades when students submit the new MCAT? Do you feel the new test is an improvement over the old MCAT?
I didn't mean to laugh when you asked if we were comfortable with it, but, you know, it's still a work in progress. I think that we're certainly learning from it. You know, it is difficult with some students having the old and some students having the new, and also some students having the old and the new.
So apples, oranges, and grapes.
Yes, absolutely. And so we're really trying our best. We have always done a holistic approach to evaluating an application. So, you know, it's still important, but really we're looking for, you know, the grades. We're looking for the consistency of grades. We're looking for the competitiveness of the undergraduate experience. And then also what the student has in terms of extracurricular involvement or volunteer work or anything like that. But the MCAT, you know, right now our average from the incoming class was a 509, which is as equivalent, I think, as you can get to the 30. It's in the 80th percentile. And so that's really what we've been striving for. And our, you know, we brought in both. So we had students that had a 30, and we also had students that had 509 as an average. I am excited about the humanities, social sciences section of the new MCAT. I think that it will ultimately bring us a different type of doctor. Uh-huh. I think that there was some concern because students were, you know, taking the intro to psych and intro to soc courses, and they really probably should have been taking more of a medical kind of focus. I think that that was somewhere where a lot of students struggled.
Right.
But I think that it's all a learning process. You know, we are, like I said, still doing a very holistic approach. So it's not just if you don't have a 509, you are not going to be accepted. It's really everything that's in a student's record that we're looking at.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you're also learning from the MCAT. What are some of the things you've learned from the new MCAT, I mean?
Well, I think that, you know, we are looking at each of the different categories instead of looking at the real overall score.
Got it.
You know, so we're really trying to focus on the sciences and really trying to take a look at how students are doing in each of the categories as opposed to really focusing on one particular, either the overall or how they do in any particular category. So it's we're looking at it a little differently than we have in the past. We also will no longer be averaging the MCAT, which is something that we've been doing for a number of years, unless, of course, a student has taken them, you know, 5, 6, 7 times, which I certainly hope there aren't too many of those, but we certainly see those.
So how do you treat multiple MCAT scores, especially with a different test? You just look at both of them?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we really, you know, again, it's, and I hate to keep going back to it, but it's that holistic. We do look at both, and we look at consistency among each of the categories, and just, you know.
You look at the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, just hope that we did the best that we could.
Right.
So.
Makes sense. Now, we're talking, it's kind of early, mid-August, and this podcast will go live on August 24th. Many med school applicants are currently drowning in secondary applications, at least the lucky ones are. What's your advice to applicants for handling and responding to secondaries in general? And we'll turn to SUNYs in just a second, but in general, just handling the deluge.
Yeah, you know, and I, one of the things that I struggle with sometimes are students not thinking that they're as important as the MCAS application. They are, and they need to really pay close attention to all of the pieces that are asked. And I think prioritizing, you know, if there are some that they can kind of get through pretty quickly, I know ours takes maybe 15 or 20 minutes, it's not very difficult, but really making sure that it's done well, done correctly. One of the things that I have really struggled with over the last couple of years when students are completing secondaries is their attention to detail within it. They're no longer using capital letters for their streets or their cities or their states or even their names. And those are really a big deal. You know, this isn't a text kind of environment. They need to pay attention to those. And
applicants, you're applying to professional schools.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You know, and when we see that, we think, oh, my goodness, you know, attention to detail as a physician is huge.
Sure.
And if you can't even do that in a secondary application, it's going to be, you know, I don't want to say points taken off, but it's going to be looked at differently.
It's a negative.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I think that that's where they really need to pay a significant amount of attention. It's not just that MCAS application that we're going to be focusing on. That secondary application is going to lend itself not only to additional information about them, but also their attention to detail, their performance, how seriously they take things. So, you know, I really can't stress that enough. It's one of those things when we get into admissions committee, we're like, oh, another one that can't capitalize their state.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
And I would guess that if your secondary application is a fairly simple, straightforward secondary application, then those little details probably become bigger deals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ours is very specific about, you know, prerequisites and legacy kind of stuff. And if there's any misspellings, if there's any grammatical errors, and if there's, you know, inattention to, you know, capital letters, it becomes a huge red flag for us.
Right. Yeah, that's very good to know, because sometimes I think people might think that if it's basically, are there any, I haven't seen your secondary, are there any like short answer questions that they have to respond to, or is it basically
No.
filling out a form?
It's pretty much a form with prerequisites. We do ask for clarification if there are any, you know, red flags or anything that you really want the admissions committee to know about you. Maybe you had a difficult semester, or you didn't perform well in a particular class, or something was going on in your life. We're looking for, you know, that kind of thing. But really, it's 15 to 20 minutes, I think, at most, that mm-hmm. it would take a student to complete our secondary.
So remember to capitalize, folks.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know that at SUNY Upstate, there's the multiple mini interview format. You use
yep.
that format. Are there also individual interviews, or the more traditional, or is it just the MMI?
It is just the MMI. This is our, I want to say it's our fifth year using the MMI. And it is a mixture of traditional types of questions, also some scenario questions. This past year we started using a standardized patient included in that. And the feedback that we've gotten, as well as the interview evaluations that we've received, have been absolutely unparalleled to what we had received when we did traditional interviews.
Wow.
We're really getting at what we wanted to all along. We have our interview questions set up to mimic the competencies that we're hoping to get the students through medical school. So they're kind of, you know, this competency is tied to this interview question, to see if the students come in with those types of competencies. So, you know, in terms of getting ready for those, I think that the biggest thing is to be yourself. Don't try to be anybody that you're not. We change our questions all of the time so that students really can't prepare for them. But I think just knowing that some are going to be scenarios and they're going to be asked by doctors, and, you know, they're going to expect that you have done some clinical experience and can, you know, address these types of questions. We're certainly not looking for students to be able to prescribe meds or diagnose patients or anything like that, but just that they have the basic, really, communication skills, professionalism that are necessary to be a good, competent physician.
Do you mind sharing what are some of the competencies you seek in the applicants?
Sure. So resilience, curiosity, professionalism, definitely. That's probably all I want to share at this point.
Okay.
Those are probably the basics, and I think that anybody can get those once they go through our process.
Right. Those are also things I don't think you can fake.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I think it, you know, with the MMI, it's much more difficult to fake an interview or to, you know, give the right answers all of the time. I think it's very different. Our traditional interviews, I just felt, did not give us what we were looking for. It was kind of the luck of the draw. You either got a really great interviewer or you got a not so great interviewer, and you either meshed with them or you didn't. And sometimes it was really, really hard. And this gives students an opportunity to meet with 5 or 6 different interviewers. And then it also allows 5 or 6 interviewers to assess them and recommend them to the admissions committee.
What is a typical interview day like at SUNY Upstate? It's not just the interview.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not, and that is important to me. It's very important that students not only come for their interview, but also have an opportunity to look around and to see if this is a medical school where they can really see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we do try to build additional time into the day, and, you know, I do realize that for some students it may be too much time, and for others it's not enough time, but we try to have them come. They get a welcome from a member of my staff, and then hopefully they have an opportunity to go sit in on some classes or check out the library or go up to the student lounge and really interact with some students. We do give them a schedule of classes so they can go and sit in on whatever they want to for as little as how long or long as they want to. And then after that, they will come in. They will have a lunch and also an info session with me, where I will go over, you know, what to expect next, how the admissions committee works. I will talk to them about the 2 different campuses that we have. I will talk about, you know, the special MD-PhD, MD-MPH, our Rural Scholars program, and I will also talk a little bit about financial aid. After that, they have a tour of campus with our current students, and either before or after they will have their interviews. It really depends, but it's really busy.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
The interviews take up about 2 hours. So it's typical that a student will spend either from like 8:30 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, or from 10 in the morning until about 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon with us.
Okay, it is busy. And one thing I always ask when I discuss applicant interactions on campus, I would assume, much like the capitalization and the periods, it's not just the interview that counts, it's their behavior throughout the day that counts.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just with interviewers, it's with
right.
students, it's with secretaries, it's with me. You know, I can tell you there have been several students, unfortunately, that, you know, during my presentation when I'm talking to them for the half an hour that I'm with them, they're on their phones, they're, you know, texting whoever. Some have even excused themselves to go and take phone calls. It's not appropriate, and
right.
and they need to really understand that they need to be on at all times, you know, and not only when they're here for interview, but any communication that they have with our office. And, you know, I have seen some emails from applicants that I am absolutely beside myself about, completely inappropriate, completely unprofessional, and we're talking attitude, but we're also talking, you know, words and hey, and, you know, again, with the, I'm going to go with the lowercase and uppercase kind of I kind of stuff. But it's almost like they're not sure who's on the other end of the computer. And, you know, we take all of that into consideration when we're evaluating an application.
I'm sure
so it's not, yeah, it's not just what you present when you're standing in front of us.
That's life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I recently sent an email by accident. You know, I meant to forward it to an employee and said I hit reply, which mm-hmm. is always bad news because... But then I realized I hadn't said anything bad. I wasn't dismissive. I was respectful. I maybe wasn't doing exactly what the inadvertent recipient wanted. My thought process may not have been what that person wanted, and I still would have preferred not send it the wrong person. But I hadn't said anything that would embarrass me.
And I think that that's incredibly important.
Yeah, yeah. Anything at this point that is digital. And let's face it, almost anything can be digital, can go to the wrong place.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. And I think that, you know, it goes to Facebook, it goes to Instagram. Have we been known to check those? Absolutely we have.
Okay. That's good to know.
If there's ever any question or if there's a vibe that, you know, our interviewers get, we will check it out. And it has yielded some interesting results.
I bet. Now is when I start getting calls from med school applicants or wannabe med school applicants who wonder, is it too late to apply? Should I wait until next year and apply in June?
Mm.
And, you know, people who maybe took MCAT late or took the MCAT, didn't get the score they wanted, so they had to retake it. How would you advise a competitive but not stellar applicant or the less than competitive applicant who hasn't yet submitted his or her MCAS application? And again, this is going to go live August 24th, I think.
Sure. It's getting late. I think really that by the time, you know, if a student's reaching out to you at this point, by the time you work with them and by the time they apply, and then by the time they're verified by MCAS, we're talking honestly, probably September, maybe October timeframe.
Mm.
And it's really late at that point. We've been screening applications now for a couple of weeks. You know, at this point, I have 750 interview slots. Actually, I'm sure that I don't at this point, but...
you started out with...
Yeah, I started out with 750. And, you know, as we're reviewing applications, we're filling those applications or those interview slots. The closer that I get to the deadline, which is December 1st, I am looking for essentially somebody that walks on water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every year we get students that ask us for extensions in their application. We don't grant any extensions. MCAS has been open since May.
Yes, it is always next year.
Yes, and, you know, it really, It's super late in the process once you get into September, October, November. You know, the number of interview slots that we have available are very, very small. I know that last year, once we hit December 1st, we may have had 25 interview slots available. And it's just, you need to, I mean, and I think that that's one of the biggest things that I could say to students is, you know, you've got to get applications in early. It's absolutely imperative. That doesn't mean that they need to be in on, you know, June 6th. But
right.
They need to be in sometime June, July, and verified by the beginning to middle of August at the latest. It's a really competitive process. And, you know, when we get phone calls asking for deadline extensions or, you know, or the day before, we've actually had students that have called and said, well, I missed your deadline because, you know, the clock on my computer was off. I'm sorry, but no.
I thought you were going to say the dog ate my clock, but anyway.
Yeah, well, very similar, but, yeah. You know, so essentially, students have 6 months to apply. You can't wait until the deadline.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We sometimes have sales, and we'll get these, you know, oh, I didn't have internet access the week of the sale. You know,
sorry.
You live on your smartphone. Give me a break. But anyway, people are creative.
Yep. Yes,
all right.
They are.
Let's turn to SUNY's PA program, Physician Assistant Program.
Sure.
Correct me now, but it's about eight years old. Can you give
yes.
an overview of the program for Master of Science degree in Physician Assistant Studies?
Yeah, so we are looking for students that have bachelor's degrees, and they can really be in anything that they want. You know, certainly in the biology or whatever, we do have specific prerequisites for the program. It's a two-year program. We accept about 35 students a year out of an applicant pool of about 800. It is very competitive, and I think, honestly, it's probably a little bit more competitive than medical school at this point.
Really?
It is an excellent program, and our reach is, you know, across the nation. It's not just strictly a New York State kind of program. But we are looking for students that are interested in going into rural communities specifically. So mm-hmm. there's a tremendous need not only for docs in these communities, but also for PAs. Sometimes they might be the only healthcare provider in, you know, in many miles. So our hope is really to get PAs into communities that maybe have very limited healthcare service and get students to want to go into some of these communities. But yeah, it's 800 applications as of this past year and 35 students every year.
Wow.
So we interviewed just a little over 100.
Wow, that is. I was going to ask you when you say it's even more competitive. The question came to my mind immediately was by what measure, and
yeah.
That's the measure that says it.
Absolutely, and you know what we're looking for really is a dedication to the field, but the big difference between medicine and PA is the requirement of 1,000 hours of experience. So they need to have hands-on patient care. And, you know, in medical school, there's no, at least at our place, there's no requirement and no number of hours that a student has to have. But for PA, it's a documented 1,000 hours of experience.
Right.
That's
6 months full-time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so it's not just, you know, EMT work because that's great patient contact, but not great physician shadowing. But they definitely need to shadow a PA. They need to get a letter of recommendation from a PA. And grades and GREs are a huge piece of it. But I think really that the kicker is that 1,000 hours of experience.
And that can be as a nurse, that can be as a scribe, that can be as a phlebotomist, that can be as a medical technician of some kind.
Yep,
Any of those would qualify, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And I have one counselor, actually the director of admissions here, who is dedicated to checking all of those and verifying, and that's another thing. All of those hours need to be verified. So it's not just you can just say that you've done it. You need to actually prove to the PA admissions committee that you have completed 1,000 hours.
Right, right. And are the grades and the GRE scores high also? I mean, is it?
Absolutely.
Academics also are important. Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. So it's not just, I mean, it, when I said earlier that it's probably a little bit more competitive than medical school, you were looking for really the same kind of academic potential.
Okay. And actually, I noticed on your site that for your medical school also, you're looking for future physicians who are interested in rural medicine, smaller community medicine. Is that correct? Also, it's not just the PAs.
Absolutely. I think that it's definitely a mission for Upstate. We serve 17 different counties. Many of those counties are in rural areas in New York State. So it really is necessary for us to serve those counties. You know, rural students, students that are interested in going back into one of the communities or at least even trying one of these communities, there's lots of opportunities for that.
Great. What about physical therapy? How do the requirements differ for somebody going into physical therapy than, let's say, the PA program?
Well, there's different prerequisites, although they're not crazy different prerequisites, and they are listed all on our website.
Okay.
But the PT program is a doctorate level program, so it is a 3-year program. Mm-hmm. And students would have to, within their bachelor's degree, have to have completed particular prerequisites. There's for licensing, they need to have certain courses that they've completed, and essentially because they're going to be foundational courses for them moving on into the program. But it's one of our oldest programs here. But again, you know, it's a minimum GPA to even be considered of a 3.0. But we're really giving preference to students with a 3.3 or higher. GREs are required. And again, a volunteer work with a physical therapist that will then result in a letter of recommendation from a PT.
All right, but there's no minimum hours requirements for the
No minimum hours, but it is, you know, definitely recommended that you have some significant shadowing, and our hope really is that you've got 2 or 3 different sites. But again, not set like the PA is.
All right. Now, you've been doing this a long time, and I'm sure you've occasionally heard either from applicants or on forums, if you happen to stop in and one, what is the worst advice you've ever heard given to a medical school applicant?
This is a tough one.
Ways? I mean, go ahead.
This is really a tough one, but really? I think that probably going to go back to what I was saying earlier, really about the waiting to apply, you know, waiting until you've got something completed, waiting until you've got this next volunteer experience in your pocket. I think that waiting to apply really to any of the 3 programs that we've just talked about mm-hmm. is probably the worst thing that students could do. So I think that would probably be the biggest thing that I hope to get across, is that applying early and getting your application complete is probably in the student's best interest all the way around. You know, I do hear sometimes, oh, you can wait until you take that MCAT and get your scores back. No. Once you take it, get that application in. Do not wait for your scores to come back, unless, of course, you walk out of that and think, oh, my gosh, I just completely blew it. Yeah. But then we might be talking about, you know, taking it again next year anyway. So,
right.
So that, I think, is probably the biggest information I hope that the students walk away with, is applying early and getting everything in on time.
All right. And this kind of leads to my next and last question. Let's say you are an applicant planning to apply in 2017. Now, you obviously advise that person to be ready to hit the submit button in June, ideally. What should they be doing this year, and when would you say start on your personal statement? When would you say line up your recommendations and that kind of thing? What advice do you have for the next year's applicant, the 2018 applicant?
Yeah, so definitely getting clinical experience is going to be, you know, a huge part of this. And, you know, students will sometimes say to me, well, I can't get in there. And they can. I think that they just need to ask the right questions and ask the right people. Oftentimes, I will encourage students to reach out to their own doctors, whether it be, you know, an orthopedic surgeon or a family doc or a pediatrician or a gynecologist, whoever it is that they have some experience with, and ask them if they can kind of come and shadow them for a couple of hours. I think that the biggest thing that students do is they ask if they can come and shadow for a couple of months, and that's probably not the way to approach it. So clinical experience, they have to have. They need to kind of really think things out. This is not one of those application processes where you just try it and see if it works. You need to have thought things through. You need to plan well. You know, I would say start getting your letters of recommendation in line starting in January. So if we're talking about entry in 2018, you know, in January of 2017, start asking for those and getting them lined up and asking the right people. You know, sometimes students will ask people because of their name or because of the letters that they have after their name, but they don't really, you know, have much to say. What we're looking for in the letters of recommendation is that they really can attest to the students, whether it's, you know, their communication skills or their eagerness in class or their intelligence, whatever it is, that somebody can really discuss them personally and not just kind of superfluously. So letters of recommendation, I would say start the application process in May. I think that the MCAT in May or June would be ideal, and then ready to roll with everything in June. So then, you know, the medical schools can get those applications and start looking at them in sometime in July.
I sometimes advise applicants.
Does that help?
Yeah, it helps a lot. I sometimes advise applicants also, if they can, especially if they see a tough spring semester coming up, to work on their personal statement over the winter break or the spring break.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, I just had a conversation yesterday with a graduating student who's working on his dean's letter, or I'm working on his dean's letter, and he's putting his personal statement together. And I said, this is not something that you can just throw together. You have to plan it. So think about it. Get all of your information down on a piece of paper, and then just start, you know, cutting out, you know, random information, but you've got to come down to a one page kind of thing that really discusses you, what you can bring to the field of medicine, how you got interested in medicine, and that it tells a story, and that it doesn't sometimes students will duplicate what they've got in their experiences and things like that, and I don't want that. What I'm looking for is really a story. Who are they? What sets them apart from other applicants? So it's something that they've really got to spend a lot of time on, and I think that you're absolutely right. If they can work on that over the holiday breaks or their spring break or whatever, that's going to really be key in their application process, because it's not just about numbers. It's not just about where they went to school and the grades that they received and the MCATs that they took. It's going to be about them and what makes them who they are, and quite frankly, the only place that does that is their personal statement.
Right. Right. No, I think you're making excellent points. And the idea that you can slap it together in a couple of hours, it's going to be slapped together, you know.
Yes. That's going to be evident, I think.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Jennifer, I think we're almost out of time. This has been fantastically informative. Where can listeners learn more about SUNY Upstate's Medical University?
www.upstate.edu. We're actually working on some changes to our website and putting some videos and things like that up, so I hope that they will come back often, and we'll have some new and fresh information for them on there.
Great. We'll include links in the show notes to www.upstate.edu, and the show notes are at accept.com/168. will include links both to the SUNY App State site as well as to the PA program and to Jennifer's last interview. Thank you again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Listeners, thank you too for joining us for this, our 168th episode. If you found this show helpful, can I ask a favor? Could you leave your feedback on iTunes? It helps us get ranked more highly if there are more reviews, especially when they are 5-star reviews. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.